This is Patrick Daly and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about connections, international business, supply chains and globalization, and the effects these have had on our life or work and our travel over recent times. In today's program, I'm joined again by my colleagues from the Supply Chain Special Interest Group of the Society for the Advancement of Consulting to discuss some of the big issues facing businesses in 2023, namely sustainability, talent and automation. These are three topics that when you think it through, they are actually very interrelated and intertwined. So joining me today, we have David Ogilvie, founder and principal at David Ogilvie Associates in Brisbane, Australia. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Patrick.
Diane Garcia, president of Lorraine Consulting based in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome, Diane.
Hello. Hi, Patrick.
And Lisa Anderson, president of LMA Consulting, joining us from the Los Angeles metro area in California. Welcome.
Hello,
Lisa.
Glad to be here.
So I've been reading this PwC Global CEO report, which was published recently. They've surveyed over 4,400 CEOs in 105 countries. And it turns out that 4 out of 10 global CEOs are concerned about the long-term economic viability of their firms if they actually continue on their current path. And for Ireland specifically within that, I was interested to see what are the top areas of investment priority. And they are in order of preference and quite surprising. Number one, automation. Number two, upskilling. Number three, technology deployment. Number four, decarbonization. And number five, rollout of alternative energy. So I suspect in other developed economies like the US and Australia, it's probably not that different. So maybe I'll start with you, Lisa. What do these results suggest to you? And do they resonate with what you're seeing in the US among your clients or just in your general understanding of business? Or are you seeing other priorities there?
No, I'm definitely seeing several of those priorities. So I don't remember them all, but technology for sure. Folks are looking at the priorities of looking at how to reshore and nearshore, but do it in an effective way. So that's why technology rises to the top, automation, and those types of priorities. While they're doing that, if they can do it in a way that's green, of course, that's, you know, just a win-win. So, I mean, it just gives them the opportunity to think about how they can set up operations or expand operations in a smart way. So many of those, you know, most of those priorities I'm seeing here as well.
Anything, are you seeing anything specifically with regard to automation?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just remembered one of the other ones you said, upskilling. But automation, because people are thinking about reshoring, they're thinking, how do I do this without paying so many wages? Because, you know, they can't afford, you know, in quotes, to bring it back from, like, let's say China. I mean, after all, we've certainly found out that we have all these balloons and whatnot else flying above us. So we definitely need to be doing something to reshore business, and we need to do it in a profitable way. So from that point of view, there's a lot of interest in automation and robotics and those types of things. And upskilling is the other one that's really, the smart companies are definitely thinking about it, because as more and more technology and automation comes to fruition, they need to, we're reducing the need for lower skilled positions, but we're increasing the need for higher skilled positions. And we have this conundrum going on. We still don't have enough people to fill positions, and we have less people in the labor market still in the US than we did prior to the pandemic. So we've got to upskill, automate, utilize technology to be successful.
Yeah. We're seeing this here as well. There's a shortage of skills all around industry. and there's a rise in immigration, and you have people protesting about immigration. So on the one hand, we need more people, and on the other hand, there's protests because more people are coming in. So it seems that, as you said, those lower skilled jobs are becoming scarcer, and the types of people that are required are higher skilled. And it actually turns out statistically that our immigrants are more qualified on average than our the people who are already here in the country. So you're getting that kind of mismatch going on at the same time, apparently contradictory, but you know, it's going on at the same time. Interesting also that you suggest this thing of reshoring. There's a very interesting interview I listened to on Deep Dish, which is the Chicago Council of Global Affairs, and they have this Deep Dish podcast, and they were talking to Shannon O'Neill, and she's written a book called The Myth of Globalization. First part of her argument, she's saying that globalization wasn't all it was cracked up to be. It wasn't as extended as people thought, and it was really more a regionalization than a true globalization, and that's more so now. And she's pointing out how countries like Mexico are doing really well out of what's happening at the moment, this reshoring coming back from Asia to a kind of a North American region, and Mexico is doing quite well out of it. So David, I read Wall Street Journal recently that there have been disappointing productivity increases in recent years, and they argue that it's due to a patchy uptake and integration of technology over, you know, a period of years. The future isn't here, it's just unevenly distributed around the place. And in an environment of zero interest rates and low inflation, people have tended to kind of throw money and bodies at issues rather than investing in technology. But now that the financial dynamic and the incentive has changed, do you see perhaps a change of attitude with regard to technology and automation, adoption, integration, implementation, and so on? So what are you seeing? Where do you think things are headed?
Well, Patrick, yes, I have seen that. Certainly, I have to say that COVID was extraordinarily good for my business because it more than doubled. And that was because there were so many people out there who found during the COVID environment that they weren't able to extract the information that they needed to make good decisions. And so that predicated then a series of system replacement type requests that we would get. Now, I think there's a lot of people looking to find how new technology can help them in the current environment and to get that productivity that they're going to need to help fight the inflationary environments and the recession that's predicted to come and all those sorts of things. I think one of the challenges, of course, is that the technology industry does not have a good success rate. ERP in particular has got a very high failure rate. You know, that puts a boundary, if you like, or a blockage into executives making a decision to adopt these sorts of projects because they are very high risk. Because let's be honest, if an ERP system implementation goes wrong, it can have a large impact on that business. And in fact, it has crippled many businesses. And so it is a very risky decision to move forward. And I think that's potentially the reason why you're seeing a lot of people talking about adoption of technology, but perhaps not the volume or the speed of adoption that you might expect with that amount of chatter, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And do you think the change in the financial environment is going to have an effect?
I think the change in the financial environment, particularly the reshoring and nearshoring that Lisa was talking about, will lead to a lot of automation. So technology in the sense of machinery and that sort of automation, I'm seeing a lot of distribution companies that I'm working with adopting, you know, the automatic retrieval and storage systems, those sorts of things, taking the manual portion out of that part of their business. I see some of the smaller businesses, for example, finally adopting things like barcoding and real-time data capture, those sorts of things to get efficiencies in their business. So, you know, the scale of the technology adoption changes depending on the size of the business, but I don't think there's any doubt that there are people who are turning to technology to get that productivity improvement that they're going to need.
And Diane, it's been in the news here. Biden administration, I understand, is making putting out some massive incentives for green technology and green investment. And it's actually causing a reaction in Europe to develop its own counter incentives. And I understand there's a big package in the making at the moment. And here in Europe as well, the war in the Ukraine has sparked a kind of a spectacular about turn as the EU has virtually weaned itself off Russian gas within a year and breaking all kind of expectations in that regard. Probably most noticeably Vladimir Putin's expectations in that regard. So every day it seems there are more investments in renewables, electric vehicles, and so on. So how is this manifesting in the US, and do you think the time is coming where this is going to become kind of mainstream, and the criticism's going to wane, and we might see it being just the way business gets done in the future?
I do think that we have these advancements. I think companies have been utilizing them, as the technology does advance. I don't know that things are drastically changing, but I do feel that companies are still, working on initiatives that will support, a green supply chain and how they can, develop or reduce waste out of the process and develop initiatives to clean up their manufacturing processes. Back to what David was mentioning about the automation and the ERP systems, mostly like I see clients who are utilizing their ERP systems to get data out so they can make better choices in their supply chains. But I just wanted to add on that some of this, initiative of green supply chains can even just be boiled down to that we know what kind of inventories to hold and what kind of inventories we need so that we reduce waste and not move product around the globe that isn't really necessary in the on our shelves or on our ships or, in transit as the companies would need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lisa, do you have any view on the question I asked David about technology rollout and this idea that, productivity growth had been disappointing over recent years and maybe the financial incentives were contributing to that and maybe things are changing?
Well, I mean, I do agree with David that, 80%, the statistics are something like 80% of ERP implementations and large technology rollouts fail to achieve the intended results. So from that point of view, yes, but that's not new. So I really don't think that the efficiency or productivity numbers you're talking about really relate to real productivity measures, at least in the US market. I think that it's more how numbers are calculated and like which industries they're looking at. And there's a lot of things that go into it. What I see from the clients that I'm working with is that if anything, they're continuing to focus on being more efficient, being more, they're automating and doing all those types of things. So I think I would be suspicious about it. And they're also implementing new technologies and, that type of thing. I mean, sure, there's always hiccups, but it's by no means new.
Mm-hmm. Okay. David, I know you, Australia has particular challenges with regard to sustainability, renewables and so on. So how do you see that agenda playing out in Australia and in the Pacific region over the year and beyond?
I'm no economic guru, Patrick, but I do see concerns that the speed at which the governments are talking about the transition to renewables and the the messages that they're giving the market around investment, I think we're going to potentially have large gaps in our capability. I don't think that the new technologies and the green energy industries are going to be able to get to scale quickly enough to take over the supply that that the fossil fuels are currently providing. So and there's a definite lack of maintenance and investment in the fossil fuel industries here. Our power was almost rationed in the peak of summer. Like I mentioned to you before we started, we're getting temperatures 38 degrees here yesterday. So, you know, there's lots of air conditioners running and there's lots of fridges that are running and those sorts of things, right? And there's a large demand and there's just no capacity to fill that at the moment apart from fossil fuels. So that gap is what I see as the biggest risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Patrick. Yeah, I just wanted to say I totally agree with what David's saying. There's a lot of talk, certainly, about the, really everyone is trying to be more energy efficient. And as it can make sense for the business, they're doing that for sure. They're eliminating waste and they're being more efficient and being, they want to conserve resources. But we are very far from getting away from fossil fuels. I mean, it's like, I heard a statistic, I don't remember the exact number, but it was something like we've moved the needle by 1%. In the last like 20 years. So, I mean, and what's worse than that is that there is a lot of push here, to go to like electric cars and to use electricity. We don't have the capabilities to provide the electricity to charge the cars and even to get any of the stuff for the batteries that are in the cars, because that's in China, which we have these crazy balloons flying over us. So I don't see how that's going to work.
93.9 Dublin South FM.
It is curious how when the chips are down, so say that take the case of Europe and the war and the Russian gas. And this time last year, people were saying, you know, we're going to be big trouble here because we are going to have to reduce and we're going to have to store and we're going to have to find alternative energy sources. And it's going to be really difficult. And now 12 months later, people are saying, actually, we've done a lot better than we thought we were going to do. We've reduced consumption quite a bit. Granted, we probably had a milder winter than we would have expected. But at the same time, there's a kind of a pleasant surprise on what has been achieved. So it's surprising when the chips are down and there's a kind of an imperative, a bit like during COVID. You know, I remember at the beginning of COVID, people were saying it takes 10 years to develop a vaccine. And yet there was a vaccine. There was a vaccine within a year. So it is surprising sometimes what can be done when you have to do it, right?
Well, totally agree with that. Interesting you say that. I was at a mining industry breakfast a couple of months ago, and one of the speakers there was saying that with all of the predicted demand for renewable in the cars and all of the other battery storage that they're going to be needed, they were saying something like the amount of copper that's going to be needed to support all of that development in the next 10 years equates to more copper than they've mined to date. Ever.
Yep. I totally agree with you, Patrick.
How's that gonna happen?
People can do a lot when they set their minds to it, but there are some issues with that particular topic that, like David said, I totally agree with David. It's not possible to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's new sources too, though. Like, I don't know, I heard, I'm really out of my element now, but I heard something about some nuclear fusion. I don't remember, but basically there's some new sources of energy. So I totally agree that there's like possibilities, but the current state scenario, there's just not enough of the key resources needed throughout the world to do what we're trying to do.
And there needs to be some mindset changes, right? Because nuclear is definitely off the table here in Australia. There's no appetite to have nuclear here at all.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And Germany terminated their nuclear program some years ago, and they're resisting turning it back on again. Although France is a country that produces a large percentage of its electricity from nuclear, which has insulated it to a great degree against some of the energy shocks. But I think the new development you were referring to, Lisa, was that recently some scientists managed to carry out a successful experiment in nuclear fusion as opposed
fusion.
To,
yeah, I thought that's what right, but I didn't know if I was right.
As opposed to nuclear fission. And the good thing about that is it doesn't produce radioactive waste. And it was the first time that they sustained a fusion reaction that produced significantly more energy output than was needed as an input to get it started. So it was a real kind of breakthrough. So the promise of that it potentially is almost limitless, cheap, abundant energy.
Right.
So
and in the U.S. we are like the world's we produce really clean energy with natural gas, and we've a lot of those companies that produce oil and natural gas are leading the entree into a lot of the green stuff as well. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of potential, but I do agree with David that it's it's pie in the sky to be thinking that it's going to be transforming our situation near term.
Yeah. Well, we've got one of our Australian billionaires. It's jumped on the green bandwagon, so to speak, and he's put a lot of investment into hydrogen. And but again, I'm no scientist, but my rudimentary understanding of how you generate the hydrogen is you've got to apply a lot of electricity to split the atom. So where the heavens does that level of power come from?
I think one of the plans there is to use wind power to generate the electricity to make the hydrogen that will go into the vehicles. That's the kind of the channel. For example, here in Ireland, they reckon that we have the potential to, because we're on the Atlantic, we have the potential to generate 7 times more electricity than we need through just solar alone. And I think one of the days in January, 40% of the energy consumed in the country on that day was generated by wind power. But we could be generating 700% potentially. I guess the other 600% we're going to export through a connector to the continent of Europe. So, I guess these are things that will happen, not in 1 year or 2 years, but maybe in 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So
I think we're really thinking about 50, to be frank.
Well, we'll see. So coming back, say, to this year then, as we kind of come towards the end of our chat, might just ask one of you to suggest, each one of you to suggest one standout issue in supply chain that we should be paying special attention to through 2023. So I'll start with you, Lisa.
Great. Well, I mean, since we've been talking mostly about technology, that's where my mind is at the moment. So I guess I would say that I think that the smart companies are going to be planning for the types of customers they want in the future, their target customer, and they're going to have more opportunity, at least in the US, than they've ever had in the past, except for maybe during the Great Depression. So they're going to have more opportunity than ever before. So they are going to have to invest in their supply chain if they want to take advantage of the opportunity. Because after all, if the other companies cannot supply what's going to be needed, if you can, you're going to be in good shape. Obviously, you don't want to have just inventory, though. So they're going to need to be investing in the right technologies, automation, people. They're just going to have to be looking at their future customers and thinking ahead and investing.
Mm. I was interested to, because when working with clients, I need to see their inventory master data oftentimes. So you can see the items, what they are, where they're coming from. And in a recent project, I was interested to see that almost everything that they were going to be using in the manufacturing process was sourced from within the region. By the region, I mean kind of Europe. Only a very few items were coming from beyond that. So they seem to be kind of pulling supply chains in tighter on the supply side, which I thought was interesting to avoid, you know, some of the geopolitical risks and other types of risks. So Diane, what would be your standout issue that we should be paying attention to for 2023?
Well, I completely agree with Lisa and David earlier to his comments. My note would just be, as far as automation, I think the clients that I'm working with that are smart about approaching automation are those who make sure that they understand their process and that they really have a control of the automation before they start adding in things like barcoding, for example. They really know their process discipline so that as they start to bring in things like barcoding, they're not, you know, creating incorrect transactions or having, you know, on-hand inventory being, you know, completely inaccurate. So it's those who have a control on their processes and really understand how to like do these things in a manual effort, and then they can speed it up with automation as things become more advanced and technology becomes more available and approachable in terms of cost.
Yeah, so it's kind of optimize the process before overlaying the technology on top of it. Yeah. So it's like what wash your feet before you put clean socks on, that kind of thing. David, what would be your standout issue?
I'm going to take it up a level and say visibility. And that can cover all of those sorts of areas. So visibility about where your supply is coming from and the reliability of your supply. Get some visibility around your demand. Get some visibility around what your processes are. I think if you use visibility as a high-level topic to improve all areas of that it touches in the supply chain, then I think you're going to be substantially better off at the end of this year than you are today.
Yeah. It can be a really big issue. It can be more involved than people think, can't it? Because you may have a supplier who's providing you with XYZ, but they make that out of stuff that they get from suppliers from other parts of the world. So it's your supplier's supplier as well, isn't it?
Well, I would suggest that, you know, more than one tier back, the visibility is very poor.
Yeah, that's true.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, and there's not only the supply issues there. There are reputational and ethical issues tied up in that kind of complexity as well.
You know, I would even say the visibility of your relationships, the quality of your relationships. You know, that's a very high level topic, but it's got tentacles that go throughout all of the supply chain. So if you can focus on improving the different elements of visibility in your supply chain, then I think you're going to be better off.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you guys again for being here. A joy to speak to you as always, all around the world, all at strange hours, different seasons, different times of the day. So thank you all. And thanks also to our listeners for tuning in once again. So until next time, keep well, stay safe, and see you back here very, very soon. All the best. Bye for now.